Welcome to Day 2 Cloud. Oh, we got a show for you today. We are nerding out really, really, really seriously about GitHub ActionsNet, aren't we? Our special guest today is a familiar voice that we'll savor for just a moment. You'll know him and you'll love him. But boy, we get into GitHub ActionsNet.
Yeah, you know, it's when they announced it, I was like, this sounds amazing. I really want to dig into this. And of course, it went to the bottom of my punch list, which is a very long list, but we got into all the different nooks and crannies about how an infrastructure person might actually utilize GitHub Actions.
We really, 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 really do. So strap in, folks, and welcome, I think, a very familiar guest. Here we go. Chris Wall, no stranger to the Day 2 Cloud audience, because, of course, you and I did Datanauts for years together, and now you're here as a guest, my friend. That's almost... Is that like really cool or weird? I don't know what, but we should catch up for just a minute before we jump into our GitHub Actions conversation. How the heck are you, man? What's been going on?
Yeah, man. I mean, I guess I'd tell folks, show them on the doll where you touched me on the Datanauts podcast, but I didn't leave because of that. You know, like, it's good times. No, been doing good. Changed roles at my job, working in the office of the CTO now. So I just do nerdy things 12 to 14 hours a day because I'm stuck at home, which is awesome. And got married and moved and all these life changes that kind of predicated that the changes that happened with my podcasting life have happened. And so now my daily life is working in clouds and automating things and gardening, which are probably my three biggest loves in life right now. So that's awesome.
And gardening. That wasn't the way I expected you to punctuate that sentence. And gardening. So that's cool. That's really cool that you're getting outside too. Because I got to remind myself, there's life out there. It's been really a cold, crappy, miserable spring up where I live. So I haven't been outdoors much because I'm like sick and tired of it being, it's in the 40s again today, which in America, that's cold for those of you that don't live in America. It's not pleasant. So I need to get outside more, man. And you reminded me of that. It's time. It's 40s or not. It's time to get back out there and live life.
Yeah, that sounds gross. It's for those not in the United States, it's been in the mid to upper 20s most of the time here in Texas, and 40s would be death. So no, it's been very pleasant. I've been outside as much as I can.
Well, dude, you've been nerding out 12 to 14 hours a day, as you're saying, and you've had some time to work on all kinds of things. I've been reading your blog. You've been doing lots of coding and working with cloudy stuff. And one of those things is GitHub, and specifically GitHub Actions. This is a new thing and what we wanted to cover today. So give us the overview, man. GitHub is giving you this feature called Actions. It kind of lets you do the things is how you put it in our notes here. So talk us through this. Help us understand what GitHub Actions is for.
I'll start with, give you kind of the basics. If you've used AppVar or Azure DevOps or Jenkins or anything like that, where it's like, hey, I want to do things, you know, that requires steps. I want those steps to be chained together. I want something to trigger those steps as to when they're going to occur. That's really what GitHub Actions is all about. It's kind of the name is a little bit funky because actions are the individual steps that occur within the GitHub Actions environment. But when you chain them together, they're a workflow. And really, it's just taking everything that GitHub put together via their webhooks, where it's like, hey, when someone does a pull request, do these things. Or when someone submits an issue, do these things. Or whatever it is the trigger may be. That's already been in GitHub forever. Actions just kind of codifies that and allows you to then say, hey, when something happens, I want you to execute this script or, you know, pull in some code or, you know, run something. It's really just whatever you want it to be, versus back in the day, you had to kind of have some sort of service running, watching for those triggers.
If you could give like an example of what would a service that you would have used had been on GitHub and what would you replace it with an action today?
The easy example, if you've worked on the Docker repo, which, you know, turned into Mobi or some other ones where you submit an issue or you submit a pull request and there's a bot that kind of responds to you and says, hey, you have to adhere to our, you know, code of conduct. You have to sign your commit. You have to apply this particular tag. Or maybe it just responds and says, thank you so much. Someone will get back to you. A human will read this. Those are webhooks that are being monitored by a third-party service, a bot, that is just watching for those events. And normally what you'd have to do is set up the bot watch for those triggers to happen. And when it happens, you give it the logic saying, you know, when someone submits an issue, parse through it and make sure it's valid, something like that, or respond. And then the bot would then call back to the, you know, to the API within GitHub and post a comment or do whatever it's supposed to do. So there was always kind of the hooks were there, but you would then had to set that up third party. Now with Actions, you can literally go to a marketplace and say, hey, I want something to auto respond when someone submits an issue, tag the issue, you know, put whatever in there. And then you just define that as a YAML file, stick that in the GitHub repo and say, do this. And that's it. There's nothing else you have to set up outside of very simple configuration.
So Actions really sounds like reactions to things that are going on, and now there's an ecosystem built around it so that you don't have to build it all yourself. You go find a thing that someone made out there that can do that action or kind of reaction for you.
To a degree, I mean, so you can set up your workflows to trigger off an event, and I tend to subscribe to that model quite a bit because I want, like you said, a reaction. If something happens, if something is triggered, do these things. But you can also use cron jobs. You can just say every day at 4 a.m. do whatever this workflow is. And you can have custom triggers that happen, you know, based on, you know, if there's a release that happens or if someone applies a tag to something, you know, then that is kind of the trigger that happens. So it doesn't have to be this grandiose thing. It could just be based on the time or based on a tag that gets applied to something else arbitrarily. And you can even have your own kind of actions happening on-prem. You can install an agent into an on-prem environment and say, you know, this is going to trigger it and do some things and then return the information back.
And you mentioned that there's a marketplace of actions, so I can go out and shop the marketplace. I'm sure they're mostly free, but you can shop the marketplace and find an action that makes sense for you. If there's not an action, can you develop your own and then publish it in the marketplace?
Yeah, so it's the same GitHub marketplace that has always existed. It's just now when you go to the marketplace, you'll see two kind of categories, one for just regular GitHub marketplace. The second one then is just actions. And from there, you can see, is it a verified action that it's a GitHub or GitHub partner has kind of blessed it? Or is it just, you know, me or you publishing some stuff? And there's a whole set of rules and whatnot. So if you want to publish your own actions, you totally can. And the neat thing is, because it's all GitHub based, if you want to use someone else's actions, even if it's GitHub's action, like, for example, checking out code is an action, you can say, I want the latest version of that action. You know, like, what is the latest and greatest version of code that they've offered you? Or you can say, I want version 1 or 2 or 3. So it even supports GitHub tagging and releases so that you can use specific versions of an action.
Yeah, sometimes actions, well, I was sometimes new versions of things, well, they break stuff.
Yeah.
Run into
pro tip, always version your actions. Like, don't just use master. That's like flying without a parachute in a cockpit of a fighter, you know? Like, you kind of probably want one of those.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit. So, let's say I'm interested in using these actions. What's the process for setting up an action against, do you set up against a specific repository or do they live somewhere else? Kind of what's the workflow for that?
No, it's in the repository. You've got a couple choices, but we'll just say the basics of it is you drop a YAML file into .github/workflows within your repository, and immediately that will be active. And based on the YAML file, you tell it when it's supposed to run. The YAML file is the workflow. And once it's dropped in there, GitHub just watches to see if a trigger is then, you know, triggered to match that workflow and then runs it. You basically have the choice of disabling actions for the repo, saying, like, you know what, I just want these to be examples or something like that. You can say, I only want to run actions that are local, or I want to run actions even if they're remote or third party. So then you kind of define, you know, what's the scope of the action to run.
Now, you said YAML files, which triggered me for sure. So a question.
Dad jokes.
I know. Do I have to write the YAML myself? I'm assuming that's fine. And, you know, we've all written plenty of YAML. Do I have to do it that way? Or if I'm using like a third party action I've collected out of the ecosystem, does it really write the YAML for me?
Well, the kind of 101 level to it is you say you want an action, and when you do, in the marketplace as an example, there's a button that you can press, which will literally load a new kind of template, a YAML template in your repository. And GitHub has this web-based IDE, you know, integrated development environment, where it kind of shows you how to put one together. They have a lot of examples of how to put it together. It does do autocomplete, and it kind of tells you how the flow is supposed to go. So even if you're like, YAML triggers you, Ethan, you know, it kind of holds your hand and walks through it. The difference is actions get put into the YAML file. They're not the entire YAML file. An action would be like, check out some code, create a comment, you know, run a Terraform plan, whatever. And so you would then go grab those individual actions and stuff them into jobs and other things that we can go into later, into the YAML file. And all you're really doing at that point is just deciding, what is the order of operations? And is there any kind of logical considerations like conditions or Booleans or whatnot that you want to surface first to determine if the action is going to run?
Hmm. Sounds remarkably like a pipeline.
It is. Were to draw
So I think you mentioned that actions are the individual steps, and then the whole thing is called a workflow. Right. So would that workflow sort of correspond to a pipeline that you might build in Azure, DevOps, or Jenkins, or something like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was at the virtual satellite and then the physical satellite conference last year, and they had a lot of examples where, hey, I'm running Jenkins, I'm running, I think, CircleCI, I'm running all these different kind of known pipeline tools. What's the comparison? And they have pages too that I thought was really helpful. It tells you the lexicon in Jenkins world, the lexicon in Actions world, how these two relate to each other, how to kind of start converting a Jenkins pipeline into an Actions pipeline. So yeah, if you think of this as a pipeline or a workflow, it's the exact same kind of conceptual model.
Well, so will Actions replace some pipeline I might have, or is it really an auxiliary tool that just does a few nice things for me?
I mean, all things in tech, I think, can potentially exist together. I don't think it's just this is better than that necessarily. For me, I had a number of workflows configured where I was kind of just using GitHub as the source of truth of the code. And I had a lot of logic then in a third-party location like AppVar or Jenkins on-prem or something like that, that was really just going and grabbing the code and doing something. And I was having to spend a lot of time watching for those triggers and pulling in those webhooks and kind of monitoring what's going on. The example that comes to mind the most is the bot that was monitoring for issues and things. So rather than doing all that, yeah, those workflows, I don't need them to be on-prem or running in a third-party service. I'll just locate those within the GitHub repo. If I'm doing a more complex configuration, like if I'm using Terraform Cloud to manage the state files and actually deploy infrastructure as code in an enterprise environment, probably not going to want to port all of that and delete it to GitHub Actions. But maybe for my personal projects, it makes more sense. So I think they can coexist. I think there's use cases for both. And also, we got to remember, GitHub Actions is 6 months old since it's been GA. So If you don't see the feature now, it probably just hasn't had enough maturity time to get to that point.
Okay. One of the things when I think about a pipeline and I'm building one out is there's a lot of other information that needs to go in besides the code. You have parameters that you might want to specify for specific runs. You have secrets that you don't want to expose to the world in your code, so you put them in some sort of secrets storage. So what would the corollary be for parameters and secrets when it comes to GitHub Actions?
The hosted secrets is literally in the repo itself. So if you're familiar with storing secrets in the repo, if you go to settings and then secrets, that would be your local secrets repository. The one exception is if you're running any code, you normally need some sort of authentication token. And if you're running third-party pipelines, you usually have to create a personal access token and then consume that based on your user account. One really nice thing with GitHub Actions is it always supplies this ephemeral GitHub underscore token value. It's never called out specifically in the secrets area. It's just always kind of there. It's generated dynamically anytime you run a GitHub workflow within Actions. So that's a nice thing. You never have to worry about authenticating to the repo. As long as your workflow is kind of repo scoped, you're fine. If you wanted to touch somebody else's repo or do something like that, you would need an access token again. But the local secrets are stored in secrets and everything else, because GitHub Actions is really just running containers and whatnot underneath the covers. So you can run arbitrary code on a Linux, Mac, or Windows instance. You could go grab secrets from, you know, Secrets Manager out of AWS, out of HashiCorp Vault, on-prem. Doesn't matter. You could bake it directly in the code if it's a private repo and that's your model. Although I tend to, I like no secrets stored anywhere because things can happen. But I'm just saying, you know, if this is like a demo that you want to run and you're just like, oh, I'm going to have this key and this key doesn't matter, I'm going to throw it away, you could do that. But largely, you're going to use the GitHub secrets or you're going to call some third-party secrets manager.
So this is kind of an off-to-the-side question here, but I was reading up on secrets because secret storage has been on my mind for some projects that I'm working on where it's time to graduate from the basics of environment variable passing and store them like a grown-up. Can I use GitHub secrets to store store secrets? Because it looked like contextually all of that documentation falls under their actions section, so it appeared to be like unique to actions, but I thought maybe you'd have some knowledge if it's more broadly useful within GitHub.
Yeah, the secrets within the repo is not bound to the scope of actions. You can use it for a number of other things, because you can also share those secrets with other collaborators. So you may be using a GitHub repo to store a secret that provides IAM credentials to a particular region within AWS, as an example. And you're storing it there because then you never have to share it with your collaborators. But whenever they're running code, they can always call an object within, you know, US East 1 using that secret and not knowing what it is. Hmm. The kind of limitations with GitHub secrets are it doesn't really support any native rotation schema. There's no real way to like plug into secrets that are in your individual account. So if you're using something like Terraform to manage your secrets for GitHub, it has to be in an organization. So in my particular case, I use pretty much all my secrets are stored in HashiCorp Vault. I have that running as an autoscaling group within one of my AWS regions. And if I really need a secret, I just push down, I just push down whatever secrets that repo needs into GitHub secrets by way of either manual or a Lambda function, something like that. So my personal view is think of the GitHub secrets area as kind of your working set of secrets that you need to do whatever actions the code within that repo may need or the workflows need. But I wouldn't use it as some kind of centralized secrets repository just because managing and lifecycling the secrets in there isn't the most robust. Mm.
Okay. And so that would be where Vault, HashiCorp Vault might come in, where you really get full lifecycle management of those secrets.
Yeah. Yeah. And Vault support, I mean, just to pick on Vault for a little bit, it supports, sealing the actual database and scaling and a bajillion other features and different OAuth mechanisms and app. I mean, it has the kitchen sink. Whereas I think the secrets within GitHub is kind of like where the end state of a secret to be consumed later by something in the repo.
Got it. But let's talk about artifacts, Chris. We talked about secrets and how those relate to actions. Now, another thing you brought up was artifacts. Explain what an artifact is, how it relates to an action and workflows.
Whenever I talk to folks, because artifact sounds like something Indiana Jones digs up when he gets the gold fertility statue and he avoids the boulder. So an artifact is just a thing. It's an object. It's a file. It could be some text. It's anything. An artifact is just something that happens as an output when you run a workflow. So for a lot of folks, their point within GitHub Actions is to actually produce code. They're looking to release an application of some sort or do a build. And therefore, once the workflow completes, you can say within the container that did the workflow and it's done a make file or whatever it is that it's built out of all the code that's in there, it's going to produce some sort of end state artifact, some sort of object, an installer or a file or whatever. You can actually say as part of the workflow, there's an action to upload the artifact. You can choose what those are. It could be an .exe file or an image or whatever to the workflow so that later on you can grab it. So you can say when the workflow completes, take this artifact, associate it with the workflow, and when you go into the actions menu, you can see it, or you can tell action, you can tell the upload action, I also want to grab a copy of this somewhere and push it to a release. So you can make this a full part of your release pipeline to get code or versions of your code out to people.
So if I was like imagining a scenario, if someone puts in a pull request, that might kick off one series of actions to start the release the CI checking, perhaps. And then if it passes the right level of everything, you could have another action to merge it and then publish it. Would that be like a potential workflow that you'd put into place with actions?
It could be. I mean, to take it something simpler, like imagine the artifact that you're looking to produce is a Terraform plan. You're actually doing, you know, an init, and then you want to do some sort of format, and then you actually want to do a plan with an output file, because you want to take all these different configuration files and have them kind of meshed into one singular canonical output file. So you could say the artifact is init, format, and then plan, and then output the completed plan so that someone else can then go run that elsewhere. Maybe that's what your artifact may be. Or in your case, you're talking about, yeah, it could be that it wouldn't be so much of an artifact, but it could be that the pipeline you're trying to drive is pull request is planning, and then when I commit or push code to the repo, go ahead and apply that code to the infrastructure. So that's the kind of the fun thing about workflows and GitHub Actions is it's really, what are you trying to do with it? And because it is so dynamic and because state can be pushed really anywhere you want, all these actions are like Lego bricks. You just put them together however you want them to be. You can kind of build whatever you want, which is also why it's a little challenging for folks. It's like, you can build anything. And then you're like, cool, what should I start with? I don't know. There's too many flavors at Baskin-Robbins, right? I don't know.
Right, right. Someone gave you like a blank piece of paper and was like, draw something, whatever you want. And you just kind of stare at it blankly for a while.
Exactly.
I'm curious about the actual, I'm assuming it's containers that are running the actions. So they're spinning up some kind of container. Do you have control over what types of containers spin up your actions? Can you select, I want maybe even a Windows container? Goodness forbid, if you had something PowerShell heavy that you wanted to run in a Windows container, is that available?
Well, you gotta pick out Windows, man.
I love me some PowerShell, don't get me wrong. Yeah. And you know, if you're not up to PowerShell Core yet, or PowerShell 7, whatever they're calling it, you're still using 5 something, you might need that Windows container. So is that an option, or is it all just like, here's the container that we give you and you're gonna like it?
No, you get to choose. So when you write the workflow, you get to choose any number of things. You could have it deploy on, you know, Linux or Mac or Windows or all of them. You can actually construct matrices. It's literally called a matrix within Actions and say, for example, you wanted to lint some PowerShell code. Well, great. Does it work on Linux, Mac, and Windows? I don't know. So you could set up a matrix to say, run this particular PowerShell function or bit of code. And you can go even deeper. You can say, I want Ubuntu, this particular version of it, you know, 18.04 and 16 and 12 and, you know, this particular version of Windows and things like that. So that's all pretty much there for you. Or if it's like, it's some weird, you know, flavor of an operating system that they don't offer, do a self-hosted runner, you know, install the application on your own environment and have it run and then report that information back up to GitHub, and the workflow will then take that information and give you a pass/fail.
Okay. And that runner, does it keep the same runner throughout the entire workflow, or could you get a different runner for each action? Because I'm just thinking about how you would pass your Terraform example. If I wanted to do the plan step, the init step, and then the plan, and then the apply, but I'm using a couple different runners, I need somewhere to sort of like stash that plan so that the apply can grab it. You know what I mean?
No, that's a good question. So we kind of skipped forward. We're going to move backwards a little bit. So there's a workflow, which is the YAML file describing end-to-end what's supposed to happen. And then there's the actions, which are kind of the granular atomic units of activity that happen. But in between those are jobs. So when you first create the workflow, it just says like, hey, when someone does a pull request to the master branch or whatever it might be, I want this to happen. I want something to happen. The something that happened is actually jobs. And per workflow, you can say, I want, you know, like take that matrix example. You could say, I want a job for a Windows instance. I want another job for the Mac instance. And I want a third job for the Linux instance. And yes, at that point, it's going to spawn 3 of them by default, all in parallel. Each one is then static for all the actions within that job. You won't lose that particular runner for the duration of that job. So for the example you're talking about, I normally just check out a Linux machine when I'm doing Terraform stuff. So it's going to spin it up for me. It's going to, you know, initialize it. And then I'll do my check out the code step. I'll do my, you know, load the Terraform CLI step. I'll do my init plan or apply, whatever it might be, maybe publish a comment. And then at the end, it'll tear down that instance and throw it away for me. But for the duration of the job, you get the same runner for that instance.
Hey, that's good to know. Now, I know things don't always go super smooth when you're initially setting up build pipelines or CI pipelines. Things don't work right, and you just live in a sea of red for a while until you figure out what thing you missed, which is, in my case, is usually a typo or like an extra space or something. How do I go about debugging my actions? Do I get like console access or view access to what's happening in the runner, or does it all run, you know, output to a log file, or can I step through the actions individually to see where things are breaking?
Well, it's, I mean, by default, jobs are sort of like starting a snowball at the top of a mountain. You kind of just watch it roll down the hill, and you know, if it fails, it fails spectacularly. And you do get logs and stuff. So what will happen is when you go to the GitHub Actions tab within your repo, it will lay out all the different workflow files that you have by name. And so when one triggers, you'll actually see the workflow is activated. There's a queued up instance to then run the workflow. Something internally within GitHub then picks up that workflow and starts the jobs. And you get to see anything that would be outputted to kind of like standard out just appears in the console. And that is stored as a log. You can then purge the log later if you want. So it's all there. And it's kind of a workaround at the moment, because if you've worked with Jenkins or something, you can normally attach to the runner, if you will, and kind of see what you can SSH to it and kind of play around with it. So Teammate is kind of that's T-M-A-T-E is kind of the actions equivalent to that at the moment. And really that'll just kind of like take a moment in time and kind of keep the runner sort of frozen at that moment in time and allow you to attach to it and SSH in and kind of do some debugging or whatnot. Honestly though, I've been working with it for quite some time. I've never actually used Teammate because I found that most of what I'm doing is kind of debugging local, getting the code to the point where I'm like, all right, this will work. And then most of the kind of red sea of red issues that I'm trying to resolve in actions is more around someone else then pulled in some code and it violated some kind of security requirement that I had, or it did something they didn't want it to do as part of the process, but not, you know, the actual workflow is broken. It's more just the code they want to submit was broken. And that can be resolved locally in a lot of cases. But Teammate would be your kind of like injection point to get in there.
I mean, you're making the point that you can kind of figure out what the problem is without having to dig into a debugger most of the time. You said sea of red. It's like something breaks in the middle and then breaks everything else. You kind of know, oh, okay, there's the broken thing. I fixed that and everything else is going to get better.
Yeah, I certainly had, you know, like I was playing around, I was learning it too, and I was trying to get some AWS credentials to automatically load based on secrets that were pushed into the repo. And you know, I was writing the bash commands to have that load. And so you're going to get the normal commands you'd kind of get in any Linux environment where it's like, oh, you know what? I couldn't find the credentials. I looked in this path. They weren't there. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really need to hook in an SSH session to check that out. So I haven't really run in, you know, my use cases are definitely way more continuous integration focused. I would imagine where you're going to need more air handling and potentially a way to get in there and really like get your hands on a keyboard is when you're trying to do, you know, building and making code to be released as some sort of artifact.
Well, so how's the documentation on GitHub Actions then? You said it's been GA for, you know, 6 months or so. Is the docs good, or are we still getting caught up on that part?
Well, it depends on the audience, right? So yeah, I'm more infrastructure than I am developer. You know, I'm enough to be dangerous. And the GitHub Actions documents are actually really good. They walk through a lot of like, what's a workflow? What's, you know, an artifact? What are all these things? And they give a lot of examples. And so, bravo, there's a whole continuous integration section. And if you're fairly familiar with those constructs, you're going to take this like a fish to water. Where it starts to get tricky is when you're trying to figure out, you know, hey, what are all my options for this trigger? You know, what specifically are the types of triggers that can happen when a pull request comes in? That's when you're going to get thrown into the developer documentation, because that's more just regular GitHub. That's where I think it may be a little bit more disenfranchising for an infrastructure background, you know, person that's just working in infrastructure all the time, because you're going to see this and think, oh man, this is literally developer stuff going in here, and I'm getting these giant JSON payloads and how to format my API call. And it can get a little bit wonky, but 95% of the stuff is actually in the normal actions documentation. And I'll tip my hat, you know, documentation usually sucks, especially for new products. And I think GitHub did a good job at making it really easy to make it feel like this is friendly.
Okay, so we've gone this far. It feels like we've covered the basics of Action. We kind of know what they're for. So let's bring it together with a story or two, Chris. Can you walk us through a use case or a project where you've been using Actions?
Certainly. I published a blog post on it too, but I was looking to use GitHub Actions to provide continuous integration for my Terraform files. I use Terraform to control everything in the public clouds that I work with, just because I love the tool. It's great. And I've been doing that a lot on my laptop, and I have a little bit in Terraform Cloud, but I wanted to see how the CI would work within GitHub Actions. So
just specifically, you're actually building cloud environments, IaaS, PaaS. You're standing up whatever services. I think from talking to you, we're talking about AWS, and you're using Terraform to stand all that stuff up. You're not going into the UI and clicky-clicky much of anything. You're using Terraform to make all that happen. And so your Actions use case is working on those Terraform files.
Yeah, it's I actually use Terraform to manage my GitHub, my GCP, Azure, like all of it, because it's pretty ubiquitous across all those environments. And so, I'm talking about my environments, not like corporate stuff. But I have mostly just the code stored in GitHub, and I have been planning and deploying it on my local laptop. And I thought, you know, it'd be kind of cool if I could just set this up so that once I make a change and kind of play with it locally, I can just throw it over to my GitHub repo and have it do the deployment and manage state for me. I don't really want to have to deal with that all the time, especially if I'm on the road or, I don't know, wherever I am. So I already had a lot of the configuration in GitHub anyways, because I use that for source control. I ended up just writing the workflows in the GitHub workflows YAML file configuration to say like, hey, when a pull request comes in, because I don't push to master, that's a bad habit. You know, if you're doing that, break that habit. But you know, I create a branch. I send that up to GitHub. And then I do a pull request on that branch, and I wanted GitHub Actions to automatically do a number of things for me. Like, hey, go ahead and make sure that it's initialized, because I use S3 as my backend for all my plans. I want it to validate it. I want it to use, I use a security tool to actually look at, you know, I think it's called TFSec, to look at, is there any vulnerabilities in my code? I wanted all that value add that I've been doing manually to be pushed into GitHub, you know, CI, right? And I didn't want to have to pay because it's free. You get like 2,000 hours or something per month. So I have that happen when a pull request comes in. And my repos are all private. You know, I don't store any secrets in plain text or anything, but I don't want just rando off the street doing PRs to my infrastructure. And so it's nice because when I submit the pull request, it'll automatically do all those things, you know, lint it, initialize it, validate it, plan it, you know, do the security check, and then it comes back and it sends me an email and it notifies me, here's the results of your plan. This is what would change. Here are the errors in your plan, whatever. And then once I say, that's cool, I'm happy with that, I then merge the code into master, which triggers another workflow that goes ahead and grabs the credentials necessary for the region, you know, if it's, you know, an Azure region or an AWS region, and then pushes the code and sends another alert like, hey, here's the results. I made those changes for you. And it's just nice because I always want to put things together in a way that it's not just me on my laptop, even if 99% of the time it is. And now if I ever need someone else to look at code or collaborate with me, or I just want to go back and kind of see what had happened, it's all there. I have the pull requests, the issues, the, you know, the branches, the history. It's all there and stored for me, and I don't have to worry about running it locally. And it actually solves a lot of problems where you just fat finger something or goof up, and you can't, because the workflow is... it's machine, right? It's no longer me with my, you know, meat spatulas mashing on a keyboard. It's always a workflow file, so it's always done right, and that's what I really like about it.
So here's a point of clarification: you make a change to that Terraform plant. It passes the checks. The action then is going to check it into master. Now that we've tested it and proved, and it's all good. And then there was another action. Is that action actually running that new Terraform plan so that the new state, whatever the changes are you've made to the plan, is reflected in your infrastructure?
Yeah, so the first GitHub workflow is basically everything up to the point where it's actually going to make the change. That's all the linting, testing, validating, planning. And that's where, before anything actually touches master, it's all in a separate branch. It's always a pull request. I want to get it to the point where it's like the what if. If you made this change, this is what would happen. And the neat thing is, because it's all in GitHub, the code's there and the workflow's there, the pull request associates the tests that I've written in the workflow to the pull request. It actually is a verification of the pull request, and I can't close and merge that data. I can't merge that commit into master until those checks pass, right? I could override as an admin, but I don't do that. And so you'll literally see in the pull request green or red. And if it's green, it means everything that I put in the workflow has passed. At that point, I know my change is good, or at least I have a fairly high confidence in my change. that's when I merge the code into master. And that's when the second workflow is just, it's just a trigger based on if code enters master, which the only way that can happen is through a pull request that's been merged. I never commit directly. Then it says, I'm going to take whatever code is now in master and run it with an apply command, which means, you know, actually do the things and then report on the results. So that's how I think of it, kind of everything to test it and get it to the point where it would. And then once I, as the reviewer, say, yes, this is good, I bless it, and it passed all the tests, go ahead and commit it. And then the second workflow says, cool, I'm going to go ahead and push this live into production.
Here's a stupid newbie question then, for one last point of clarification. So when you're actually at that, you've done the merge into master, we're good, and that final workflow is apply, make it so. Where the heck is Terraform? Where's it running to actually do that?
Running in the runner. So just a few weeks ago, from this is like early May of 2020, the Terraform team actually did a revamp of their action. And before, you had a separate action for each, you know, init plan. It was kind of annoying. Now they just have one action that literally loads the Terraform code into the runner so that it's there. And then you just say normal Linux commands like, hey, run Terraform plan, Terraform init, Terraform format. So it's actually running in there, because if you think about it, the runner has checked out the code. So it has the code in the working directory. It has the Terraform CLI loaded in the working directory. And all of the environmental variables have been populated by the workflow to include like your GitHub secrets, the token that you need, and anything you need credentials-wise. It's all there. It's all masked. You know, you don't have any visibility into it, but you know it's been loaded. So it's able to run everything just locally, and you've authorized it because you've given it those credentials and those secrets, and you're just telling it, you know, I want to plan it or I want to apply it. And then it just throws away that instance, and you just keep the logs.
Right. And the actual state you said is being stored in S3. So the state from the infrastructure, that's safe. And
good clarification.
It doesn't matter where the executable is.
Yeah, that's a good point too. So I mean, I know we're picking on Terraform a lot because it's just one of my favorite tools. But yeah, if you were to run this and do the default where state is local, you know, because the state file you absolutely need, that's the holy grail of running with Terraform, you would be kind of screwed. Like, don't run it in a runner, because as soon as the runner gets thrown away, that local state would be gone. You have to use either Terraform Cloud or S3 or some remote state and give it the credentials to update and modify that remote state. But yes, as part of that process, it's just like you're working on your laptop. It does the changes or it plans the changes, and then it pushes all that state information to the remote repository. Correct.
Funny, I've been working with code build and code commit on AWS for the last couple of days, trying to build a very similar thing where I'm deploying things with Terraform. And I feel like I ended up rebuilding the same runner pattern that you just described, where I now have something that just loads the Terraform CLI. And then based off an environment variable, I tell it which actions I want it to run in Terraform. Do I want it to do init and plan or apply or whatever? And then it stashes the plan file in S3 for retrieval. So yeah. Like, I should have just used GitHub Actions the whole time.
Well, that's the thing. I think anytime, I hate dependencies. I don't want to load a lot of actions. And some of my actions are literally just run bash, you know, run something in bash, because then there's no dependencies outside of the operating system. So most of my plans are extremely not dependent on anything else. You know, like the checkout action, you're just always going to kind of need that. And we can assume that's always going to be around. We always have a checkout code. And then loading the Terraform CLI and getting like TFSec to check some code. But all the arbitrary do this command, pass this variable, check this state, I want that to be in the CLI as much as I can, and in bash or you know, Windows PowerShell, whatever, just because then I don't really have to worry so much about that changing. And again, anything I do check out as an action or consume as an action, I version it just to make sure if I share this YAML file with someone else or I use it later, it's always going to use the exact version that I specified of those actions, versus I come back 2 years later and it pulls from master and all of a sudden everything's broken. You know, or if the action no longer exists, it'll try to check it out and it'll say, well, actually, this action can't be used because it doesn't exist. Then I'll know it's time to update my code.
Let's do another use case here. You know, earlier, we were talking about actions, and I kind of said, it sounds like reactions. And you said, and I quote, no, dummy, you can also do daily cron jobs. So you got a daily cron job action?
I like that that's a quote, the dummy part. yeah, I do. I feel like the best sysadmins are the lazy ones, and I certainly have a left. It's like on my iron throne of laziness. But at any rate, yeah. The other thing that I do is I want all of my Terraform plans to be checked for drift. And normally I was kind of spot checking that. I was just kind of doing it ad hoc or whatever. Now what I have is a YAML file in all of my repos that contain Terraform code where 8 in the morning UTC, they launch a cron-triggered workflow that just says, here's a matrix of every single plan that's in this repo, run all of them, and then send me an email. Let me know what drift exists. And I don't want it to auto-remediate because maybe I made that change, I'm testing something or whatever, but I do want a report card of my drift across GitHub and Azure and all these other environments to come in every morning and just kind of tell me, like, where's the state of things at and is there anything I need to address? And that's been awesome. I actually like that you can just cron that.
Nice. Any other ones you want to share?
I would say, you know, these are a little more advanced. If you're not already Terraforming, you might be thinking, what are these crazy people talking about? And what's all this infrastructure as code thing? So the simple place to start and the thing that I kind of used ubiquitously way back in 2019 was the really simple stuff. Like, hey, there's an action you get off the marketplace that just looks for old issues, you know, dead issues. Is it over 30 days? Has there been any response to the issue? If not, auto-close it. You know, are there labels properly assigned to an issue or pull request? If not, fix them. Those are the easy ones. You can check those out from the marketplace directly. There's a lot of, like, that's the one that you're going to find the most 101 level examples. So maybe start there. And I feel like after I made the workflow for the one repo to do label and issue and all that kind of maintenance, you know, kind of housekeeping stuff, I've just cloned those to every other repo because there's no repo specific state in the workflow file. So once you get your good housekeeping and hygiene workflows set up, you can just kind of spray those across all your repos. And the nice thing is it keeps it really consistent.
Well, then takeaways, Mr. Wall, if they're, as you said, so this show is one of those where if you're into this world, you're into Terraform, you're starting to use GitHub more, you're managing your configuration files and such with GitHub, then all of this makes sense. And otherwise, maybe not. Maybe this was a tough one to get through for some folks that haven't gotten there yet. All of us coming from that infrastructure and operations background. So give folks some takeaways, some things that you'd recommend if they want to get into GitHub more and understand GitHub Actions, CI, and so on.
I recommend to start with the GitHub Learning Lab. It's this kind of back-end service that GitHub provides where authors of, you know, different educational materials or course materials can actually create an entire learning path that's hosted entirely out of GitHub. So you're just going to go to the GitHub Learning Lab, sign up for it. It needs a little bit of permissions to work with your organization or your user account so that it can create repos and stuff like that. But then there's three different workshops you can go through and none of it uses Terraform. You don't have to worry about any specific. It's all very like, here's the introduction to continuous integration and continuous delivery. So they've got the continuous integration workshop, very simple to do. It shows you all about how to build a plan, how to trigger it, what happens with it, tagging, commenting, the whole nine yards. And it's free. And then they've got two continuous delivery workshops, one for AWS, one for Azure. So you can kind of pick the flavor of cloud that you want. Recommend using that for sure. And again, it's free. It's kind of fun. You actually interact with it live. Like it'll submit an issue and then you resolve it. And there's steps to show how it works. And to kind of go with that, there was an advanced GitHub Actions workshop video from GitHub Universe back in 2019. And that video is pretty cool. I just like seeing how I always want to see how the vendor kind of thinks about CI. And so that's a good video that just shows like what they think about it, how workflows should be built, stuff like that. The other two takeaways would be, we've kind of covered it, but just to like underline it and add some red text and highlight it, don't put any sensitive information in your repo. If it's private and you're playing with it, still be careful. So don't put keys, tokens, passwords, account information, even your AWS account ID is like a semi-secret thing. You know, put that somewhere else. And if you are thinking, okay, I'm just going to do it for now, when are you ever going to fix it? You know, the time to fix that is now. So don't put it off because you don't want to show, like Corey Quinn has the S3 bucket negligence award. And you just don't want to put yourself or your company into that news category of, you know, oh crap. So to those ends, I recommend you'll start with a private repo, build out, you know, it, go through the workshops. But then after that, when you're looking to play with your environment, start private. Don't make it public. Get fresh data in there, you know, and just check out an existing infrastructure that you already have. Check out something you're already doing as code with configuration management or infrastructure as code or label management. And then you could have that chance to play with it privately to perfect it. Every example that I have on my blog, everything I have on GitHub that's an example, definitely started as a flaming dumpster fire as a private repo where I was like, wrong. And then I finally got it to work. And then I started completely over using that learning to share with other people, because you're going to make a lot of mistakes and that's fine. You just don't want to like accidentally share something you didn't mean to share. So start private and then you can go public if you need to.
Yeah, I love learning anything new like that. It's like if you're not blowing it up on the front end, then did you really learn it? Did you really? I mean, you got to blow it up, right? That's just how that goes.
It's like my code works. That's great, but I don't know why. That's right. Almost more terrifying than my code doesn't work.
I don't want it to work the first time, and oh, that's no good. Well, Chris, it's good to hear your voice and have you back again with us on the Packet Pushers Podcast Network here on the Day 2 Cloud Show. I know everybody knows you and loves you, my friend, but remind them, where can they follow you on the internet?
Yeah. Well, I revamped my blog. It's cleaner and all the crap is off of it now. So if you want to see much more nerdy stuff again, walnetwork.com. And I'm on Twitter at Chris Wall. And everything else, when you go to walnetwork.com, it's up in the corner. So all my links to GitHub and stuff are there to make it easy for you.
Well, cool, man. It was great to have you. I hope we have you back on the show again to talk about more stuff. Thanks to you that are out there for listening. Virtual high fives, because you're pretty awesome. And by the way, if you have suggestions for future shows, the things that you want us to talk about on Day 2 Cloud, hit us up. I'm at EC Banks on Twitter. Ned is at Ned1313. And if you want to be more sneaky and private about it, nedinthecloud.com. There's a form there where you can submit your show ideas to us that way. And hey, maybe you're out there and you got a way cool cloud product you want to share with our audience of IT professionals. Well, we can accommodate you. Become a Day 2 Cloud sponsor. You're going to reach several thousand listeners, all of whom have problems to solve. Maybe your product fixes their problem. We're never going to know unless you tell them about your amazing solution. Find out more at packetpushers.net/sponsorship. Until then, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.